All right, is that going to stay in your head all day, all night? You know, is it turning into an earworm? That's what we're going to talk about. The song, "We'll Let the Dogs Out." And it's not only an iconic tune for some people, hopefully not you, it can turn into an incessant repeating annoyance in your head. It replays over and over again. That's something, of course, we call an earworm. And it's that little snippet of the song that you can't stop singing, right? It can last for just a few minutes. For some people, it can go on for days. So why do these tenacious tunes burrow into our brains? What kind of songs are the most tricky? Why are we so attached to repetition in music? Well, my next guest has been thinking and writing about that. Elizabeth Margulis is author of On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind. She's also a professor in the Department of Music and director of the Music Cognition Lab at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, we asked our listeners to send us our favorite earworms. We compiled a playlist of 150 of them.
And oh, no.
I could invite everybody to check them out if they dare on our website at sciencefriday.com/earworms. So we have a nice little playlist of that. We're also tweeting it as I speak, so you can watch for the tweet to go there. So what do we know about earworms?
Well, a lot of the research in the past couple of years has been about trying to describe what earworms really are. So looking at how long they tend to be. So, I mean, if you think about musical imagery, it could be a really great thing. I mean, you wouldn't need iPods if you could just go on a run and listen through all your favorite songs in your head, you know, while you were jogging along. Yeah. But unfortunately, earworms are an involuntary form of musical imagery. You can't usually summon them up at will. And you can't pick, unfortunately, which songs burrow in as earworms. Not only, but it doesn't tend to be the whole song that plays. It tends to be a little segment, often from the chorus, of under 10 seconds. And once it's in there, it just repeats and repeats and repeats.
Is there some part of the song that is the sticky part, the most sticky part?
Often that's the part that's repeated the most.
Yes.
So, yeah.
We'll let the dogs out over and over again.
You could tell when you heard that we were really going to elevate the discussion here.
Well, let me play a few or a couple of our favorite ones that we picked out. This is actually the top choice on our Facebook page right now.
Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
Oh, yeah. We're making some people either happy or sad right now.
I approve of that choice.
You like that choice? Yeah?
Advertisers and people who write TV theme songs and so forth are really good at figuring out practically what generates an earworm because it's part of their job is to, you know, get their message into your head that way. So one way to look at what kind of musical characteristics give rise to stickiness is to look into that kind of repertoire.
Mm-hmm. And besides the stickiness, what is there in our brains that latch on to the earworms?
Well, so when we hear sound repeated again and again, something pretty special starts to happen. We are really listening ahead and anticipating what sound's going to come next. So much so that, you know, if I say to you something like, mana, mana, right?
I already know that earworm.
It's pretty irresistible.
Right.
So we're really almost singing along in our heads while we're just passively listening to music. So and that's really what an earworm is you're kind of singing along in your imagination, in your mental soundscape. And you've already had plenty of practice doing that just listening to music.
Mm-hmm. Are there some people who are driven crazy by it? That they just can't get rid of it and then really go nutty?
Yeah, there really are some pretty disturbing, extreme cases of earworms. Some people suffer from perpetual music track. Mm-hmm. So there's actually a neuroscientist who suffers from this himself and wrote a whole big introspective article about it. His name is Stephen Brown. He's at McMaster University in Canada. And when you suffer from this condition, it can really, really interfere with your life in ways that are more significant than ordinary earworms.
I believe it. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking about earworms now. let me play one more as we come back from the break. Here's another earworm that is very popular. If you have kids, this one might be uncontrollably stuck in your head.
Well, now they know. Let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go.
If only you could let it go, right?
Indeed.
Are the earworms different for kids and adults?
You know, that's an excellent question. I don't know that we have good data about the development side of things. I mean, I know from my own experience with my kids, they often complain about getting songs stuck in their heads, so I know it happens. But as for whether it's different, I mean, you might expect that kids at certain stages are able to process different features of a melody, so it might be that different kinds of tunes get stuck. I don't know.
Is classical music as much of an earworm as popular
music? Earworms are really dependent on an individual person, on personality characteristics to some extent. So we have some evidence that if you score higher on personality traits like neuroticism and obsessiveness, you tend to be more susceptible. There's some conflicting data about whether or not being a practicing musician makes you more or less likely to suffer from earworms. And then we also have some intriguing findings about the role of your tendency to move when you listen to music. So you do tend to dance and tap around a lot.
Right.
If so, you tend to be more susceptible to earworms.
Is there an eye worm? I mean, a vision that you have over and over again of something you saw. You can't get out of it.
This is one of the really fascinating things, is that this seems pretty special about music. I mean, there aren't really many other things that get stuck in your head in this way. There's some literature about people who play Tetris the whole bunch. I mean, really, a lot of Tetris. Experiencing some form of intrusive Tetris imagery while they're trying to go to sleep. So it's possible, but it's much more unusual.
Let me see if I can get a call in before we go to the break, because a lot of people like to talk about earworms. Everybody has their own. Let's go to Scott in Northern California. Hi there. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite, or least favorite, I guess I should probably say, earworm is the Meow Mix theme song.
Oh, yeah.
I hear that, and I...
Please don't sing it.
You know, the sad thing is that we...
Don't sing it now.
We know that saying it is enough, so there's probably lots of people out there.
Yeah. How long ago do you think you heard that one, Scott, and still in your head?
Oh, God, I think I was in high school the first time I heard it. I don't know. It seems like it's been forever, though.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, that and Barney's theme song.
Oh, the Barney song. That used... Oh, yeah.
Those two just drive me absolutely insane.
Oh, all right. Thanks for bringing them up, Scott. And as you say, that's what advertisers know. They know how to create an earworm, it seems.
Yeah, and I think people are interested in seeing whether you can't hijack this tendency for some kind of benevolent purpose, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, can you insert some other message than some advertising message and get it to be memorable?
Can you make something that you really want to remember into an earworm? You know, it's pick up the milk today. Pick up the milk today or something.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, there's actually a company out there, for better or for worse, trying to harness the power of earworms to help you learn languages.
Wow. All right. We're going to come back and talk lots more about earworms. Our number 844-724-8255. If you'd like to tell us, or you want to take a chance in giving us what your earworm is, Elizabeth Margulis is our guest. We'll be right back with some more earworms after the break. Stay with us. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. We're talking about earworms this hour with Elizabeth Margulis, author of On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind. And Dr. Margulis, we seem to have hit a chord in our Twitterdom out here, because we have a lot of people talking about the eye worm. I asked about the eyes, and Courtney says, Candy Crush has definitely caused me eye worms. When I play a lot, I even saw stuff when I blinked.
Interesting.
And then someone else, Zach says, if I play a game on my phone or tablet before bed, I cannot end the imagery in front of my brain. Eye worms are real.
Fascinating. I mean, I guess video games are one of the other kinds of areas where you'll get really repetitive stimuli, some kind of really repetitive sensory stimuli that might make you prone. I don't know. That's interesting.
What is your favorite earworm? I understand we built this city by Starship. Is that right?
You know what? That's not my. I'm not gonna say it's my favorite earworm. In fact,
it's a worst offender. I mean, your favorite means it's your worst, I guess.
Right. I mean, my favorite thing about that is that that's a pretty uniformly hated song. But it's also a song that when it comes on after you haven't heard it for a while, you know, people start kind of moving around a little bit, and it gets stuck in there. And then when you realize what song it is, it's like, oh no, no.
We built this city on rock and roll. Built this city. We built this city on rock and roll.
I think that one did it for me for tonight. So there are new earworms being created all the time then, as new music comes out and new things happen.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, you asked earlier if it's possible for people to get classical music stuck in their head. And certainly if you're a person who listens to a lot of classical music and that's really the language you speak, in a sense, that can seem quite sticky and quite intrusive.
Now, you say there are people who are trying to find a positive role for earworms. How could we do that? Any suggestions?
Well, so the idea is if you've got something that can just kind of bubble up in your mental soundscape with the slightest provocation, it'd be great if there were information you really needed, like little reminders about how to do CPR or something in an emergency situation. If there was some way to get that information so it was readily accessible, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, you know, like even a public service message, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
There would be a jingle of some sort, you know.
Yeah, rather than devoting so much mental sound space to Disney, for example, or, you know.
Was there anything really surprising as you were writing the book? Anything that really surprised you about earworms?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most surprising thing, really, is the degree to which they're repetitive. I mean, if you think about that, why should that be? And then you go out there and look at the music we listen to in the real world and start facing up to how repetitive that is, and then that sort of opens up new problems all of its own. Are we listening?
Yeah. Is this sort of our brain singing for us, even though we're not voluntarily singing? It wants
yes,
to sing?
I like to think of it that way. And we do have a lot of good neuroimaging evidence that when we're listening to music, even when we're not moving at all, there's all kinds of activity in the motor planning region. So we know that there's a really interesting action-perception coupling in music. And that means that even when we're just sitting in our chair at Symphony Hall, you know, not moving at all, that we're often kind of really singing through or playing through this music in our heads.
All right. Let's go to the phones. We got time for a call or two. Let's go to Diana in New York. Hi. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Or letting me talk. I had a question. Has there done any research about how long it takes? Like, if two people hear a song, like an earworm, a catchy song, has there been any kind of research around how both of them start singing at the same time, like a minute 30 later?
Yeah, that's been a really interesting topic recently, is how do you really induce these to people in the lab, right? Because a lot of previous studies have been descriptive. They've been giant surveys to people about the earworms they tend to experience. But we could really learn a lot more if we could stick people in a booth, play them music, and induce an earworm right then. And in fact, we find that we can really do that. So you can bring people in, play them a catchy song, and then you get them to do kind of a task that puts them in a low attention state. So it's that kind of state when you're most conducive to earworms. And a startlingly large percentage of people, more than half, will actually experience earworms related to the song that they just heard 5 minutes ago.
Wow. Let's see if we can get one more call in from Christine in Fairfax, Virginia. Hi, Christine.
Hi. I just had a question. I went from being a music education major over at James Madison University to teaching really young kids, being an elementary music teacher. And I was wondering if there's any kind of correlation between the kind of harmonic complexity of a song and how often it'll get stuck in your head.
Yeah,
there's some evidence that a song has to have a certain amount of simplicity, because part of what's happening with an earworm is that you're able to predict what's going to come next and encode that information. But it also helps it be really catchy if there's something a little off. So it's simple enough so that you can, you know, generate expectations accurately, but also surprising enough that it can kind of get you hooked.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. Now that we've gotten everybody hooked on one one earworm or another for the day, how do you have a recipe for getting rid of them?
People have different strategies. So some people go and they actually listen to the song, and sometimes that quells the fire for them. But often people will just, you know, this, since these tend to crop up in a low attention state, if you really apply yourself to something that requires a lot of attention, you can often get it to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the old standard, which is, you know, sing your friend something worse and get their tune stuck with that one.
But as soon as you hear that music again, it's going to come right back. Or is there no guarantee that it will come right back?
Yeah, there's no guarantee. I mean, we're the right now, kind of all we know are what strategies people tend to use to make their earworm episodes stop. We don't really have a good prescription that would work for everyone.
So we need more, as they say in science, we need more research.
Exactly.
On this one. Okay, thank you. Elizabeth Margulis is author of On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind. She's also a professor in the Department of Music and director of the Music Cognition Lab at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, Arkansas.